This is The Full Spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment hosts and guests do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. It's the full spectrum. We got news,
entertainment,
interviews, and so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, the Annie E. Casey Foundation releases its 2017 Race for Results report. We'll hear from Mississippi Kids Count with their reaction to that report. And time for this week's Chalk Talk, our look at the week in JSU sports. Welcome to The Full Spectrum for Thursday, October 26th. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. The Annie E. Casey Foundation has released its 2017 Race for Results report, and the report does not paint a pretty picture when it comes to how a child's chances to succeed are affected by the child's race. I spoke with Laura Spear, who is Associate Director for Policy Reform and Advocacy at the Annie E. Casey Foundation. All right, so tell me about the 2017 Race for Results report.
The 2017 Race for Results report shows us that in order for our country to successfully move forward, we need all of our kids to access resources and supports that we need for them to succeed. We created this report in 2014 and updating it now, and it tracks the progress and challenges that all kids face meeting these really important milestones for their success. We use these 12 measures. We create a composite score, with 1 being the lowest and 1,000 being the highest. And what we found is that there are very persistent and significant disparities, especially for African American, American Indian, and Latino kids when you compare with white and Asian children at the national level.
One of the things that the report says is that a person's race is a leading barrier to success in the U.S. What do you mean by that?
Well, in this report, we've looked at kind of the things that children need to be successful, and then we looked at different groups of kids to see where, you know, where they were on that sort of spectrum. And what you find when you look at that data is that among the many things that impact the likelihood of a young person being successful, the race of the family and the racial background is often connected with a lack of access to resources. Among, you know, there are other things that are, of course, important, the education level of parents, the income of parents. But, you know, because of the history of our country, the race and ethnicity is also very much connected to lack of access to resources.
I guess it's which came first, the chicken or the egg, but is it the race itself, or is it the economic status of the family that plays the bigger factor? Or can you tell?
Yeah. Well, I mean, economics is certainly important. But, you know, when we looked, one of the things that we did with this report is really try to look at the policy decisions that have been made in the past that kind of brought us to where we are today. And there's very clear decisions that have been made in the past that have things that have connected some people to more access to more opportunity than others. Some of the examples that we lift up are things like redlining, which kept particular groups of people in particular neighborhoods often very much disconnected from opportunities. And we still see many kids of color and families of color living in those same neighborhoods today, even though the practice of redlining has been, officially anyway, made illegal many decades ago.
Yeah, officially. I asked the question because we're living in a time and under an administration where people are really looking at their racial divide and saying it's growing wider. And so when you see a report like this, you have to wonder, and when you mention something like redlining, it's definitely that people of certain races are being targeted to not succeed.
Well, certainly in the past, that was the case. I mean, it's very clear when we look at things like segregation and the history of segregation in our country and the impact that had on schools and on where families live. I mean, it's very clear that particular groups were targeted across the country. And, you know, I think today we've put in place legal barriers for there to be very explicit racial connections to policy decisions. There are still very many implications every single day with policymaking that's being done in our country. And, you know, one of the things that we lift up in this report is the importance of policymakers taking that on and understanding that the decisions that they are making are having disproportionate impacts on different groups, and to take that into consideration as they're debating policies and deciding what's going to be best for our country. Because in the end, we need all these kids to be successful. They're the future of our country. They're the future workforce. They're the future parents and teachers. We need them to be successful if we're going to be able to compete on a global scale. And so, you know, we need to really consider what are the things that we need to do to break down those barriers so that they can be successful.
You know, one of the other findings of the report was that children of immigrants account for 30% of all low-income kids, but account for less than one-fourth of the nation's overall child population, which is disturbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, kids in immigrant families are an important part of the child population today in our country. But they're often also are disconnected from opportunity. They tend to have two parents. Those parents tend to be working, but they tend to be working in very low-wage jobs, and oftentimes that means that their families are low-income. And, you know, what's especially disturbing right now is that we know that living in a stable family, growing up in a stable family, is one of the most critical components of success for kids. And for about 5 million children who have an unauthorized parent, although they are citizens, right now they face real danger of losing that really important family stability. So we're really encouraging policymakers to take children's well-being into consideration when making decisions about immigration policy in our country.
And were you able to break down whether immigrant children of color were faring even worse than other immigrants, or regional differences, say immigrants coming in from Mexico as opposed to Europe or Asia, or any other regional differences?
We did break down some of that. I mean, we don't have super fine-grained information in our report, but we did look at that data across the different groups. I mean, there are some, you know, it's a very nuanced story because these are families coming from all over the world, from all different educational backgrounds, all different circumstances that bring them into the country. Some are coming in as refugees, and they have access to different kinds of resources than those people who may be fleeing poverty or very unsafe situations, but are not officially refugees, you know, according to the way that we bring them into the country. So, you know, when we look at across the board, what we see, for the most part, that, for one, most kids in immigrant families in our country are kids of color. It's about 85% of all kids in immigrant families are kids of color. And that they are struggling on lots of the measures that we track across the board.
Wow. Well, it's the 2017 Race for Results report. Why don't you give folks the website address so they can go look at the report for themselves?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. The report can be accessed on our website. It's www.aecf.org. to find the site, and if you want to get to Race for Results, it's / and then the word Race for Results.
And there's lots of other great stuff on there as well. So enjoy yourself on the site, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Not necessarily good news, but important news.
Thanks so much. It was great to talk to you.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from the folks at Mississippi Kids Count with their reaction to that report. Stick around.
Hope Policy Institute provides independent, nonpartisan analysis of public and private policies that affect the financial security of Mid-South families and communities. Hope's work supports efforts to create an environment that ensures that all people, no matter where they live, have the opportunity to prosper. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Together, there is hope. HopePolicy.org.
Welcome back to the Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. Heather Hanna is co-director of Mississippi Kids Count, and she's an associate research professor at Mississippi State University. I spoke with her about the 2017 Race for Results report. So, Heather, talk to me about the report, and as a researcher here in Mississippi, what does it make you think of?
The report focused a good bit on childhood outcomes, differential outcomes by race, and they did have a specific emphasis on immigration this year, children from immigrant families, and that's just because of the national discussion that's been taking place. And we do have a number of children living in immigrant families in Mississippi, 29,000 to be exact. But the primary focus for Mississippi that came out of this report are the differential outcomes among black and white children. And they did an index score where they looked at 12 different variables. And for the index score for African American children were significantly lower than for white children.
When you look at a report like that, which regions of the state come to mind?
You know, one of the things that the Annie Casey Foundation really advocates for is when you design policies that impact children and families across your state, you really want to look at data. You want data-driven policies, number one, and you want data that is broken down by race and geography so that you can make sure the policies that you are implementing are targeting the groups and areas most in need and who can most benefit by these policies.
So which areas in Mississippi would be most in need?
You know, I don't have those data in front of me, but we know, I mean, here at the Social Science Research Center, we've done a good bit of work in the Mississippi Delta, and so naturally that would be an area that would be of concern. The report did not necessarily break down findings by county. They were just at the state level. But, you know, that's probably an analysis that needs to take place that goes even further to look at outcomes by county.
And even if you read a report like that, but even without reading that report, if you look at educational outcomes here in Mississippi, health outcomes here in Mississippi, we already know that there is a divide by race. But I guess this kind of information helps you narrow it down. As people involved in this field, though, what does Mississippi Kids Count do with that information?
Yeah, well, we publish an annual data book, a fact book, And well, the next one will come out in February, but they're on our website for every year. You can go back and look at each one. And so we look at data pertaining to children's health, their education, their economic well-being, and their family and community life. And we also, in looking at those data, make Mississippi-specific policy recommendations. So in each of those fact books, you can find those recommendations.
And I would think that those policy recommendations don't necessarily vary wildly from year to year. You're able to become, I guess, polish them up and become a little bit more specific. But tell me in general what you know already about which areas need the most focus and what you would like to do here in the state to close this divide.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just very obvious looking at this report that some of our children are not doing as well as others. And so targeting policies to these groups of children makes a lot of sense. And so that's certainly what we would advocate. And, you know, one of the things that came out of this report is that even regardless of racial group, our children are not faring as well as other states. And I think that's just it's a resource issue. It has a lot to do with the environment that you grow up in. I mean, we know that, you know, a young tree really depends on good soil to grow and flourish. And just like trees, young trees, children depend on enriching neighborhood environments to reach their full potential and contribute their talents. So we want to see good schools, transportation, after school, educational opportunities, a real diversity of ideas and experiences. We want to see all that available for all our kids in the state.
We know also that because of a growing need for resources divided among many areas, that one of the areas that has suffered is healthcare in rural areas. So when you talk about, you know, coming up with policy initiatives, and we know a lot of it is based on available resources, and we know that those resources are not necessarily available in abundance. How does that affect your recommended strategy?
And that's where the data-driven solutions come into play. You want to make sure that these are the actions that you take have a good return on investment. Make sure that we know that they're tried and true and that they've worked in other places. Because we want to be responsible with the resources that we have in the state, absolutely. And one of the neat things that's going on right now is we are here at the Social Science Research Center in conjunction with the University of Mississippi's Medical Center, their pediatrics department, and we are working on developing a statewide system for developmental screenings in order to catch issues with children early on and provide services, because we know this would be a great equalizer in terms of childhood outcomes. And so we want to make sure that we have all of our resources for kids coordinated and working together in that respect.
That sounds like a really great initiative, because I was recently talking to someone from the Mississippi Department of Education who was telling me, unfortunately, some kids slip through the cracks. You know, that you're not aware until later that they missed some of the basics that they needed. So screening early could really be critical in helping close that divide.
Absolutely. If we can, look at children and see what's going on with them developmentally as early as age two, then hopefully we can get that cleared up in time for them before they start to school and before they get behind. So having these developmental screenings as well as attending high-quality pre-kindergarten programs are all very important steps.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. And before I let you go, tell folks where they can go to learn more about Mississippi Kids Count.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a website. And so if you just Google Mississippi Kids Count, there's actually two sites that will come up. One is a data center where you can access data about Mississippi related to children, which is a hugely valuable resource. The data, these data come from a variety of government sources, and they are clean and ready for download. You can create maps. You can create graphs. So that's an amazing resource that's available to the state of Mississippi. And then we have another website that you can go to that's our main webpage. And there you have all of the publications that we put out, policy briefs, fact books, and so forth. But if you go to the main Kids Count website, you can still access the data center from there.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Heather.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, this week's edition of Chalk Talk.
Hope Enterprise Corporation is a family of development organizations dedicated to strengthening communities, building assets, and improving lives in the Delta and other economically distressed parts of Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Learn more about Hope's work to create opportunity where it is needed most. Hope-EC.org.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty, and it's time for this week's edition of Chalk Talk, our look at the week in JSU sports. I spoke earlier today with JSU's assistant athletic director in charge of sports media, the one and only Wesley Peterson. And of course, we began with JSU football.
Okay, Wesley, I hate to do it, but 0-7, man. When you look at the football team, what is it that's going wrong this season?
You know, obviously you don't want to be 0-7, but we are rebuilding the program, that particular program in the athletic department. And sometimes when you're in that rebuilding mode, you're going to have setbacks like these. And again, you know, when before the season started, the coach, Coach Tony Hughes, he was very optimistic about having more wins than we had last year. But we are in a rebuilding mode this year with the football program. So we're just asking all of our fans to stick with us and be patient. And the goal is to build a winner. And that's what we're working toward, is building a winner. And hopefully we can get a couple games this year or a few games this year and have some momentum going into this coming spring, and then have momentum from the spring going into next football season.
I'm sure the team is doing everything they can to turn around the season. But I really am wondering, specifically, is it defense? Is it offense? Are there things you guys are looking at that you know that they could be working on now that could make a difference this season?
The coaching staff, they do a really good job of preparing our student athletes for their competitions, as well as the other parts of a student athlete's life, the academic component, the social component, the life on campus component. So they're always evaluating and reevaluating things within that program. So yes, they are always looking to see what the problem is. And generally, you know, if you lose a football game, it's not one thing that is the problem. It's not this one interception or this one turnover or this one touchdown that you gave up. It's other things that contribute to it. So, again, you know, that's part of the process of rebuilding. Obviously, our student athletes are trying as hard as they can. They want to win. They came to Jackson State because of the tradition of winning. They want to be a part of that tradition, and as well as our coaching staff. So we want everyone to know that our student athletes and our coaches and our athletic administration is doing everything that it can to provide a winner on the field, on the court, on the track.
Okay, well, up next, Mississippi Valley State. What are you doing to prepare for this game? And in your mind, what do they need to do to be prepared for this team?
Well, it's probably a unique situation that we're going into. Being 0-7 and going to play a team that's not only an in-state rival, but the coach that's there was your coach.
Rick Comagie,
who is a very good football coach. Not only did he coach here, he recruited a lot of the players that are seniors on this team. So he knows our personnel pretty well. And I think that the biggest thing that we'll have to do is just what we've been doing so far, is compete, work hard, stay in the game for a full four quarters, and hopefully we can get some breaks and things will go our way, and really limit any turnovers, no interceptions, hopefully, no fumbles on our part, and try to score one more point than they do. You know, that's the goal of the game, is to win, whether it's by 20 or one. So we think that the plan has been pretty solid, has been solid. It's just been a breakdown here or there because we're so young as a football team. I think of the 65 players that are playing, 40 are freshmen or newcomers.
Wow, that is huge.
That's a big number.
Yeah, that's two-thirds.
Yeah, so they got to learn how to win. They have to learn how to win. And you know, from my vantage point and just talking to our athletic director as well, we can see incremental progress, and that's the positive thing. We can see progress week to week.
All right, basketball season right around the corner.
The teams have been practicing for close to a month now, and both the men and women are looking for really going deep into the SWAC tournament this year and contending for a championship. The women's team last year, they started out really strong. They beat a bunch of non-conference opponents, but they got hit by the injury bug as we went into SWAC play, and that kind of derail their hopes and thoughts for the season. So her team is back now. Coach Serena Dixon has brought a veteran team back. I think she has some of the better players in the conference. And the key is going to be keeping them healthy to compete in conference play. The men's team, I really, really felt bad for Coach Brent last year because every week he had a different injury from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. Every week it was another key guy going down with injury. And, you know, it's really a testament to the coaching job that he did that season to get the Tigers into SWAC postseason play, because that was probably one of the better coaching jobs I've seen up close and personal. Obviously, you know, we didn't have the results that we wanted, which was a championship. But Coach Brent and his staff did a really good job coaching those guys up, having a next man up kind of mentality to, you know, even just go and compete and be competitive with teams like Texas Southern and Southern and Alabama State, some of the better teams in our conference.
And what percentage of his team is are returning players?
He has a good returning core. He returns the preseason SWAC Defensive Player of the Year. And Trayshawn Bolden, who's a Jackson native and a senior. He returns probably some of the best guards in the conference. And Chase Franklin, who left last year with injury, a shoulder injury, early in the season. And Paris Collins, who probably could have won preseason Defensive Player of the Year as well. Coach Brent has a really good nucleus coming back. We have an event coming up the day after homecoming on November the 5th. It will be our basketball madness, and it's the first official preview of both the men and women basketball teams. So we're really excited about that. The coaches are excited about that, the players. The event is free to the public. It's going to be set for November the 5th, the day after homecoming football game, and it will be at the Lee E. Williams Athletics and Assembly Center, and the gates and the doors open at 5:30 p.m.
Ah, nice. For all the struggles the football team has had this year, there's been some great news with the cross-country track team.
Yeah, the men's team won its first SWAC cross-country championship in probably close to 10, 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a while since we won a team championship. We've had individual champions, but this is the first time in a while we've won a team championship. And this past Monday, over in Clinton at Choctaw Trails, our men's team won the cross-country title. And one of our best runners, probably one of the best runners in the country, a young man named Vincent Langat.
Yeah, we talked about him.
We talked about him the other week. And he won first place. He came in first place. And now he is he really helped lead us to that championship. Basically, he blew away the field in the meet. and his teammates. We had another runner finish in third place, and we had a bunch of top 10 finishes. So that was nice. really good for the program, and hopefully this championship can help jumpstart some other things on campus.
And there may be an award in his future?
Yes, in Vincent's future. Currently, he is in the running for the Hero Sports Cross-Country Runner of the Week. And basically is a voting competition where you can vote for the person to win. And we encourage all Jackson State fans and supporters to go out there to Hero Sports and vote for Vincent.
I'll tell people where they need to go again.
Actually, you can go to the Jackson State sports website. It's gojsutigers.com, and click on the link about Vincent and the Hero Sports Award and go vote for him there.
Yeah, let's do that, folks, to get one of our own in. Well, actually, let me change that. We're going to do a pickup. Yeah, let's do that. I know a lot of Jackson residents would like to see JSU get that award. So if you want to do that, go to
and that website again is gojsutigers.com.
Well, Wesley, it's always great having you here. And I know the next time we talk, I just feel it. We're going to have a win under our belt with the football team. Coach Kamaji may have other thoughts, but we're going to do that.
That's right. And once again, go Tigers.
All right, go Tigers. That's our show for today. Up next, Latin Jazz with host Dale Morris. Have a great evening.